Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time for parenting once again, and Joanna Fortune is with us. Afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Now, first question, is this one of the stranger ones I think we've ever had? Here it is. My husband really likes to listen to Guns N' Roses with our four-month-old baby really loudly on our big TV. It usually happens between 6 and 7 in the evening after the working day and before our baby's bedtime at 7. I'm sure my husband sees it as fun and as important bonding time, but I see it as age inappropriate and worry it would result in nightmares or have an adverse impact on our baby somehow. Can you please advise us on this? Not least the effect it might be having on the neighbours.
The loud music and that, yeah, that time of day, everybody loves to hear a bit of Guns N' Roses at full volume at 6 of the evening. But there's a couple of things in this one that I thought was really interesting, actually. First of all, the Guns N' Roses thing is kind of a by the by. The choice of genre for me of music is fine. It's the volume that it's being played at and the time of the day. They're the considerations. Because obviously for a small baby, you would have to, whatever music, if it was Beethoven or Guns N' Roses, the volume you play it at has to be modified because their hearing is still developing. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very sensitive. So the volume of it, I think I'm going to back whatever parent is writing in here. I'm going to say, look, yeah, the volume needs to come down. The time of day as well, because when you think about why babies do love music so much, it's the rhythm, it's the, you know, the tempo of it. They feel the rhythm in their bodies physically as well. And that's quite nice for them. But at coming up to bedtime, I'm not sure I'd want some kind of hard, you know, drum and bass line that's going to stimulate them. So I also get that maybe it's the time of day and the volume. And just one other thing on that for me was the big screen TV, because look, I'm just going to, a 4-month-old shouldn't be sitting looking at a big screen TV for any period of time. They're not able to process or make sense of that stimuli. And you could end up with an overstimulated baby come bedtime. But the other thing, I don't want to be like, so the music's a problem and the volume and just don't be doing it. Because actually this parent is saying, look, I think it's bonding time. It's the end of the working day. It's when they spend their time together. So I think small changes could make big differences here. Music and movement are good for brain development. Lower the volume, turn off the screen and dance with the baby. Like if those changes were made, this is lovely. OK, the other thing I'm going to say about the music is there's a lovely you can look at it, whatever you listen to, if you've Spotify or if you listen to CDs or whatever it is. Rockabye Baby. Have a range of lullaby versions of rock music. You name it, it's lullabied. And that might be better for the time of day. So yes, it's Guns N' Roses, but in a way you mightn't typically listen to it. And I think that could be quite a nice thing as well, because it's something about a shared interest. Clearly, the dad is a big fan of the band and sharing this with the baby. So just make small changes and it's a big difference. But the other thing running through this for me was this, you know, he sees this and I see it this way. And I think as parents, and particularly when we're parenting a small baby together, because this isn't going to go away. There'll always be things that you wish were different. There's always going to be things that you say, well, I wouldn't do it that way. No, I wouldn't be making that call. Yes. And it can be a cause of big tensions between parents. So you have to kind of be honest with yourself about what you want as a parent. I want it to be Mozart. It is Guns N' Roses. Okay. But if your child has, you know, asthma, I need them to take their inhalers, no matter who is in the parenting hot seat at the time. If it's really cold out, I need them to wear a coat. So be careful about what's a want and what's a need and pick your parenting battles. Because if you try and say, assert, look, my way or no way, then you're kind of appointing yourself as the parental manager.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's just going to cause a myriad of difficulties down the road when you're like, well, why aren't you making these calls and why aren't you? But if you set it up that it has to be the way I say so. So just pick your battles. I'm not disagreeing on this. There are definite changes I'd make to it. But I think overall, just kind of pay attention to what's a parental want for you versus a need. What does your baby need to have done by both of you versus how you want it to be done?
I'd be interested to know, you know, does the baby go down to sleep at 7 without any problems, or are they, you know?
I know of a situation where a baby, like, absolutely would go to sleep listening to Metallica.
Yes.
Because it was just such a familiar rhythm, because that was the music that was played at home. And because it was familiar, it was soothing. Do you know what I mean? Also, you know, other people would be like, no, that has me like my heart rate up, my adrenaline's pumping. There's no way I'd be going to sleep. I think you have to tune into what effect it has on your baby. But I am going to just like really push the lullaby versions of it, because, you know, some people are like, I can't bear to listen to Five Ducks Going Swimming or Frogs Eating Flies Sitting on Logs. Like, I just don't want to do that. But there are lots of ways of bringing the music in. I love the idea of music. Just turn off the screens, turn it down and get dancing. Then it's perfect.
Yeah. Also as well, if this baby really likes listening to Guns N' Roses and the baby just drifts off to sleep, there's a template for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
Spin forward 30 years and they're in a relationship, and oh my god, we have to play that before you can go to sleep. That's
I'm just going to chill out now, so a bit of, but I, you know, there is this thing about, you know, I think we all have kind of playlists that speak to us in that way. You know, the song you put on if you're feeling angry, you know, have an angry playlist and you listen to some songs that let you vent emotionally, and then others have, you know, songs that really help you wind down, or songs you'd associate with taking a bath, or we have associations with different music. And yeah, they're definitely built over time. So like, I honestly, the genre of music isn't the biggest issue here.
Mm, yeah, indeed. Now, next question is this. My daughter is a content 2 years and 7 months, but for the past few months, she gets upset or annoyed if anyone laughs. She could run off, hang her head in shame, or shout, "No laughing." When we're driving in the car and we laugh at something on the radio or during conversation, she tells us not to laugh. It's like she thinks we are ridiculing her when we're not. We try to teach her that laughing is good, and often point out when she laughs that it's good fun. Any insights?
I mean, I'd be interested to know how you teach her laughing is good and point out that it's good fun, because she's two. I know she's 2 and a half, but, you know, like, she's still very young to kind of get abstract concepts like that. So you'd have to play it out a bit rather than just tell her, oh, we're just, you know, having fun. This is what fun is, because for her, that's all very abstract. So she sounds like a sensitive child, not a bad thing at all, but just being mindful of it. So be aware, is she sensitive in general? Is she sensitive in other ways? And that 2 and a half, like, you'd be paying attention to, is she sensitive to sudden temperature changes? Or, you know, we've just been talking about music. Is she sensitive to loud music? Is she sensitive to other things that can trigger her or get her a little bit anxious or riled up? She may also perceive that you're laughing at her. And, you know, for young children, that's not something that they conjure up, because often they do things, and as adults and parents, we find it endearing and cute, and we do laugh at them. And, you know, that's under two, they're kind of just reacting to things more impulsively. But over two, they begin to become more, are you laughing at me? Did I do something? Why is everyone looking at me? They become a little more sensitive to that. So she may perceive actually you're laughing at her. And sometimes, be honest with yourself, maybe you are. Or simply she mightn't understand the laughter at all. Like, you're all of a sudden laughing to something you heard on the radio. That wasn't funny to me because I didn't understand what was on the radio. And out of nowhere, we've gone from being quiet to raucous laughter. It confuses or it scares her. So there's a whole kind of range of things that can go on, because this isn't unusual, actually. And anyone listening who is parenting a sensitive child, and again, if you are, you don't need to pause to wonder about that. You know that you are, you know, that you may have had experience with this as well. So what I would do with her is, you know, because she is so young, you can build this up gradually, is practice a range of expressions using face and sounds, so that you're going to make an angry face and maybe make a sound that you associate with anger. You know, you might growl or grr or something like that, that she's like, okay, that's angry. And then you might make a sad face and make a crying noise, and you might make a happy face and a soft laugh, and then a big, you know, kind of ah ha ha kind of face, and make a bigger sound, so she knows happy versus laughter versus funny versus scared. And she's working all of those out with you, and you can make that a game, not a one-off. Keep practicing it with her so that she can pick up the cues and make sense of what's going on around her as she begins to grow up and develop beyond this point. I think as well, just say what you're laughing at. I'm laughing at the radio, that was funny.
Yeah.
I'm laughing at, in a very short sentence, I'm laughing at what this man said. I'm laughing at what I'm reading. This book is so funny. Whatever it might be, because you want to make sense of the confusion for her. And I think that's going to help with her. The other thing, though, that jumped out, Sean, was the fact that it's the last few months. Now, it could be not related at all, but the last few months have been pretty stressful and difficult for little kids. And we are now seeing more and more impact of that. They've gone back to their daycare or preschool or school or whatever it is they're doing. And there's more movement, at least for now, that they're going through. So they've had to go through quite a bit of change. And she might just be holding on to a bit of residual tension or heightened anxiety around what's been going on for the last few months. So I'm going to suggest you do a lot of sensory play, because she's right at that age for that. Lots of tactile, different texture bowls, messy play, and let her really get stuck into that. And lots of outdoor, if you can, get her out, jumping in puddles, running around, falling over, digging holes in the garden, whatever it is you're comfortable with within what I'm saying, get her doing that, because I think it'll help get her out of her head. Mm. And if it is the tension related thing, that should release that residual tension.
Just referring back to the first question, the dad that likes to play Guns N' Roses, one texter says, maybe the kid likes the music, maybe it's not an issue for the baby. Well, let's assume the baby does like it, but there are the issues of volume. And
absolutely. Well, the baby's not crying. I'm also assuming the baby likes it, by the way, but just the screen and the noise. Yeah.
Julie says, my husband played heavy metal to both babies. He was so relaxed by it, they used to relax and drift off. But I was constantly nagging him to watch the volume. Now, the next text might be from one of the kids from that family. If it helps put that lady's mind at ease, my dad used to play Guns N' Roses to me when I was a baby. And I got 600 points in the Leaving Cert. Don't remember any nightmares either, says this texter. There's two things that may or may not be connected to each other at all. We're going to take a break after that. Is being shy a bad thing? 53106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. Joanna Fortune is still with us. Next question is, it's not so much a parenting question, it's from somebody who's works in a similar area to Joanna, really. I am a healthcare professional and work with children. I often hear parents and teachers describe children as being quiet and shy. This is always meant to be a negative trait. I try to explain that children have different temperaments and personalities, that some children like to listen and observe before they join in and play. I'd really appreciate Joanna's viewpoint on this and how she would explain that being shy is not a negative and that we're all different, and what are her thoughts on this. I suppose this is a very opposite time to be asking this question, given that so many little ones have started school and creche and maybe they are being a bit shy in the first few weeks.
Yeah, and some kids are shy innately. It's their personality, because shyness is a personality trait. It's not a fault. It's not a limit. It's not a problem. I think often it can get misconstrued as a problem, because as adults, we have a desire, I guess, or an expectation that children are, they're all in the middle of a group. They're getting stuck in. They're getting involved and really active. And it can be a bit worrying for us because we care. It comes from a good place, I think, by the way, that we care about children. And we're like, oh, that child's holding back a bit, and that child doesn't seem to be as vocal as the others, and that child seems to be more passive. And so we can actually make shyness a problem when it's not. But I think as well, sometimes some children are struggling. They are having a problem and their struggle is mislabeled as shyness. It's because they're shy, when actually it might be more appropriate to say, actually, no, it's because they're anxious, they're avoidant, they're, whatever other struggle might be going on, but it gets mislabeled as shy. And I think, just to give, shy people a shout out, I think, it is evidenced that, shy people tend to have, better developed listening skills, partly because they do stay quiet and listen to what others are saying before they respond. They have good observation skills because they are observing others, reading others, predicting others, and making sense of situations. And it certainly doesn't mean a lack of confidence. Just because a child or a person is quieter or a little more reserved, or holds back and observes before they put themselves forward, that doesn't mean they lack confidence. That might be actually somebody who is very assured in themselves, very confident in themselves, and that's simply how they engage. And I think around this, language matters. You could say whatever child is very quiet, and somebody should respond to that, yes, they are attentive and engaged. you know, just because I'm quiet doesn't mean I'm not engaged and participating and having fun with what's going on. Because I actually think it's not a problem for most people. And for some it is. I think in general, though, we should avoid labeling children as shy, because children will pick that up. Of course they do, and they hear it. But it actually can make them more self-conscious about, is there something wrong with me? Is there something wrong with how I do things? And it can put an unnecessary emotional charge on something. Use language like reserved, a great listener, you know, whatever other words that you want to use for that. I think that's fine. I think in terms of how, though, if you do have a child who tends towards shyness, but you feel, yeah, but they're not coping great with it, it is actually holding them back in school, or it is holding them back a little bit, then you could just do a little bit more active parenting with them around preparing them for what's going to happen ahead of time. So that you can, you know, we've talked about this before, you would get out your little Small World miniatures, your Doll's House characters, play out scenarios, you know, the school, the yard, birthday parties, wherever you think this actually is causing a problem, play it out in a short, succinct story, clear beginning, middle, end, and play out the same story multiple times, so they integrate that as a default. And when they're in that situation, they can bring to mind your positive focused story instead of whatever's going on for them internally. I think as well, you know, we have to be aware that there's always variations in how comfortable any of us, children certainly, but any of us, if we're honest, are with groups, different size groups. Not everybody loves being in a huge group. Some children really take, you know, their emotional charge from time alone or downtime, and that enables them to then go and engage with a group. So you might have a child who does their day at school and comes home quite flat and withdrawn and needs time doing something alone, solitary and quiet. And that's their way of processing and recharging. And that's okay. You know, we can often over worry about things that are not. So we have to be, some children do much better with one or two other children than 5, 6 or 10 other children, or are, you know, naturally a little cautious or hesitant around adults they're not that familiar with. I'm just thinking of kids going into school year now and meeting new people.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think, look, as natural as shyness is, if it's holding a child back, use gentle yet firm encouragement, and that's going to help them. I know it's hard. I think it's really sensible to take some time to get to know people and suss out something new. I think that's really smart of you. But once you've had 5 minutes to do that, I think it's time that we step in. I'm going to stay with you until you get going, and then I'll step back out. You know, so you're saying, look, what you're doing is really smart. It makes sense. If you don't want to throw yourself in there straight away, that's a sensible thing to do. But we are going to get you actively involved. So I think that gentle yet firm, always done through empathy, can be really helpful. But that's for those children who are struggling. Don't assume just because your child is shy that they're struggling. They may be perfectly happy.
And if you think it is anxiety, because we have... we've all been through an anxious time. Kids have been through an anxious time. They've been through all sorts of changes that, you know, they might be so young they don't really understand those changes. It's hard to say to a 4 or 5 year old, say, for instance, you know, you're anxious. They don't know what that means.
Oh, no, not at all. And, you know, again, I wouldn't be labeling that for a young child either, but they do understand a concept like uh-oh feelings.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's hard for you to get involved because you have an uh-oh feeling. And, you know, really small children, they know what that is because they all know uh-oh. They know what that means when they've done something they shouldn't and they get that uh-oh feeling. So if you say, you know, where might that live in your body? If you have an uh-oh feeling, where is it? And they might say their tummy or their head or their hands or legs, wherever they locate it is fine. What color is it? What shape is it? Really try to get them to, you know, go a little bit deeper into it to make sense of it. And what kind of things make your uh-oh feeling go away? Okay, so that helps find your happy part. Now you're into parts language and you can say, so what other things make your happy part get bigger? Let's look at how many things we could do with that. And if you get an uh-oh feeling, I have a plan for you. You're going to go to the designated adult in charge and you're going to let them know that you've an uh-oh feeling. And as a parent, you're going to nudge that designated adult and say, if they come to you with that, what they mean is they're having a worry, they're having an anxiety, and they really need just some time that you stay with them until they get through it. Or you can, you know, teach them. I think it's a nice way to do, you know, self-hugging, or say, you know, when you feel an uh-oh feeling, you can give yourself like a bear hug. You wrap your arms tight around yourself and you count to three and then you let go. And then you wrap your arms tight again and you let go. And what you're really doing is tense release, but you're doing it in a way that makes sense to children. So you're giving them a practical tool that they can do that. If you do feel it's a worry or if it's anxiety, then that's different to shyness and the response would be different.
Mm. Is it, I mean, I also, is it, is there a point, an age at which you can say, well, you know, little Mary is shy, as opposed to, I suppose, a natural shyness a lot of children might have?
You know, if it's a genuine personality trait, yeah. People say, look, I'm shy. That's how I. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, when the children begin to be able to describe themselves and use language to describe how they're thinking and feeling. I think it's when adults do that for children or about children, it becomes a problem because children think, oh, is that a problem? That must explain why things are hard for me. So I have an issue. Whereas if you're saying to children, you know, look, some people are shy. Some people are very outgoing and you're a shy person. That's just the way it is. And you normalize it and normalize the discussion. I'd be thinking when children are certainly, you know, coming up to 6, 7 years old, they're able to have that. Most of them, I don't want to generalize now, most of them are able to have that kind of conversation. But it's about how we say it. You know, it's not that we explain away, oh, well, you know, she can't do that because she's shy.
Yeah.
You know, that's when it becomes problem focused.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, I suppose to end where we started, if you're shy, it's not a problem. It's just
not a problem at all. No.
Joanna, thanks a million for
nice sensitivity. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks a million, Joanna. Joanna Fortune there. You are listening to The Moncrief Show.
Moncrief on News Talk.